Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It is Wake Up Call here on a Friday. Thanks for joining us. Richard Justice is going to join us this hour. We're going to talk about baseball, where it sits today. A lot of issues surrounding it, obviously, with the coronavirus, the delaying of games, what could a season look like, what's on the table, what's off the table. I am a little curious, and normally I wouldn't be, but I'm a little curious at how the pay structure is going to be down the line. I mean, you hear this story about the minor league baseball players are going to be paid like $1,000 a month, but there is the minor league baseball, you know, business is not in good shape with this. Even when it comes back, it's not going to be in very good shape. How can it survive this year? Can it survive going into next season when if everything's back to normal? Will that be back to normal? But we will talk about what Major League Baseball is going to do. And we'll talk a little too about him, too, about this the Astros story that we had yesterday about Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch being available to come back to baseball at the end of this season, quote-unquote, whatever this season looks like. Their suspensions were to the end of the postseason of 2020. If there's no postseason, it's that great. You can get right back into it. It's not tied to any specific amount of games, whereas if you get suspended for PEDs, let's say, and it's 50 games or 85 games or 30 games, whatever it is, it's games. And if there's no games, you got to wait for games. So if you're suspended for performance-enhancing drugs, you've got to wait for baseball to resume, so your suspension then kicks in from that point. But it's not the case for these two guys. I mean, these two guys are basically suspended on the calendar, not necessarily the schedule. And those are two totally different things. But we'll get to Richard Justice's thoughts on that, plus the idea of playing neutral site postseason games. Would it work? I think it would work because I think we're starved for sports, and I don't think if you put the World Series in a city, no matter where it is, you could, if you put it in Miami, and Miami doesn't draw Marlins fans at all, but I think you could get the city of Miami to rally around the World Series in a celebration of a return to some parts of our life that we may be getting back. L.A., absolutely, I think, is a great place to have it. But even if you put it, no matter where you put it, I think there is a camaraderie amongst us that says, you know what? This is back in our lives. We're kind of excited it's back in our lives. There's a level of normalcy about it, and we will support it, even if it doesn't include any of our teams. It is a wake-up call. Tony D, Ron Culver.
Listening to Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. Yesterday was the 30th anniversary of UNLV winning the national championship. And listen, we were supposed to be heading into a Final Four in Atlanta, you know, and I saw a lot of simulations, like people are doing like, all right, we put it all into a computer and this is who would have won. And these is, you know, I think those are cute and fun. And when we're quarantined, heck, listen, I'm analyzing the viability of a person's life if they got put in Slytherin house in the Harry Potter universe. So, I mean, to each his own, you know, occupy their time.
Or you had know, like what the story we talked about yesterday, where you had over 300,000 people watch two guys on a twerk off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You don't
so
need
if
that.
You want to put statistics in a computer and have it run a who the Final Four this year was going to be. Who am I to tell you not to in this crazy time?
Have you seen the thing? There's like some people are doing is they're just putting two random teams together and watching the simulation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't think I will ever be at that point where I got to watch a computer simulation game.
I hope not. I hope I never get
to that. Because I think, you know what that is? I'm sorry, Tony. That right there will lead to Skynet.
Yeah, that's totally is going to lead to Skynet. Exactly. So a friend of mine, Ron Futrell, out in Las Vegas, is a guy I got to know. And when I was living out there in my early, you know, my late 20s, it was the late 90s. And my wife and I got married and we lived in Vegas for 3 years. And I got put kind of right into the UNLV
I went there for auto racing, and I ended up in the UNLV scene at the station I was working at. And I learned a lot about the rebels of Jerry Tarkanian, and Ron Futrell, I consider, is the official, I consider him personally the official historian of UNLV athletics, especially the Tark years, because he was really knowledgeable about everything that went on in the chaotic NCAA sanctions and chasing Jerry Tarkanian and the championship team of 1990 and losing to Duke in 91 and all of that. But I started thinking, because there were all these memories that were flooding my social media timeline from a lot of my friends from Vegas. And I started thinking about that team a lot. And I kind of dug in a little bit of research. We've had teams, we have plenty of teams in sports, plenty of teams that have been really good. Really, really good, but don't win a championship. It's one of the injustice is too strong of a word, but it's one of those things we do in sports that kind of can irk you a little bit. When you have a team that's extremely talented and is blowing away the competition and setting records and whatever it is that they do, and like the 2007 New England Patriots is probably the best example of them all. But when they don't win the title, we sort of forget anything that they did. Like, if they didn't get the cherry on top of the sundae, or better yet, the sundae, we kind of forget about them because they didn't achieve the end result. The end result in all of this, it doesn't matter what you do in the regular season. It doesn't matter how many records you set. It doesn't matter how many All-Americans you have or how many MVPs, you know, what MVP you got. And what, it doesn't matter. What you have in the end is you're supposed to bring home a title. If you don't bring home a title, we don't remember what you did. In fact, if we do remember what you did, it is only to highlight your failure at the end. We do this to a lot of teams. UNLV is a perfect example of that. The 1990 championship team that Jerry Tarkanian put together, that had Larry Johnson and Greg Anthony, Stacey Augmon, all those guys that were on that team, Anderson Hunt. I mean, you just think about how awesome that team was, that went 35-5 that year, won the national championship, beat Duke by 30 points, captured the championship. But a lot of people sort of forget going into the next season, they had those guys coming back, but the NCAA had put a sanction on UNLV for the 91 season. They put a sanction on that team for them to not make the playoffs, the postseason, if you will, not make the tournament. So they were the defending champs, and they were not going to be able to defend their championship. And it only was they went to the NCAA and said, you can't do this. Like, you have to come up with a compromise. We are the champions of college basketball. You want to suspend us? You want to do something? We could talk about that later, but you are not taking this away from these guys that agreed to come back. Like, Larry Johnson could have gone pro. All of them could have gone pro, but they stayed at UNLV so they could make a run at the championship. And so the NCAA said, fine, you can play in this postseason. In 92, we're going to throw the ban on you. So they got to defend their championship. And that team made it a point to throttle every opponent they played in sort of a defiance of the NCAA to say, you know what? You're going to grant us this gift of defending, fine. Not only are we going to defend our championship, we're going to kill everybody along the way. We're going to slaughter everybody. You think we're the running rebels? You wait till we're done. And they were annihilating people. And that team was too good. I mean, Tarkanian said he would be blown away in practice how dedicated Johnson and, you know, Anderson Hunt and all those guys were, Greg Anthony, all those guys were, how dedicated they were to complete perfection of the game of college basketball. Here was the problem. When they beat Duke in 1990, they beat him by 30 points. I mean, there's a famous image of Jerry Tarkanian leaning back in his chair with about 5 minutes to go, putting his hands on his head, knowing I'm done. I'm done. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to coach anymore. I don't care what goes on in this game. We're up by 30 points. We're annihilating this team. We're going to win the national championship. Tarkanian famously told the media in a practice before the Final Four game in Indianapolis against Duke that he didn't feel right. He did not feel very good. He told the team they would lose because they weren't focused. And he was very worried about the game. And that game came down to Greg Anthony got a charge call, went in for a basket, went in for a layup, got the basket, thought he got the foul. But instead they called charge. That was the fifth foul. He was sent to the bench. Duke went on to win. Duke was a better team. I mean, they had a seasoned Bobby Hurley. They had Grant Hill as a freshman. Leitner was really starting to develop as one of the forces of college basketball. They were a much better team than the team that lost by 30 points in 90. And gone was UNLV's chance at a perfect season and a chance at, you know, college basketball history, and going down as one of the greatest basketball teams in you could put that team, if they had completed that journey and went undefeated and won the championship, you could legitimately make a case that the 91 team, you could look through the history of college basketball and you could make the case that they were the best team in college basketball. You might lose, you know, there were some Lou Alcindor teams in UCLA that were really good, right? But you could say individually, just season alone, season to season to season, not carrying over a dynasty or anything like that, just from the start of the season to the end, it was the best college basketball team of all time. But we never talk about that. Never. We never talk about that because they lost. Because they lost to Duke. And what could have been for that team? All the problems that the NCAA had bestowed on Tarkanian from his time in Las Vegas when he got there in the 70s, to the, you know, what the stuff that he had from Long Beach when he was the coach before that, all the way through, the times the NCAA just kept hammering that program, until finally he wins a title and then they say he can't defend it. And then they finally get a chance to defend it through some compromise that he has with the NCAA. So they take it upon themselves to make a point and they don't finish it. They can't finish it. And so it's one of the biggest what ifs for me, because, you know, in doing the research on it yesterday, because I was just really kind of coming up with this idea, like just seeing all these my friends posting about what it was like to cover that team in 90 and what helped, you know, again, we talked about it in our Bad Boys of College Basketball. They all got in the hot tub with, Perry the Fixer. And it was a bad picture in the paper and, you know, the downfall of Jerry Tarkanian, who had to leave the program and, you know, all of those things. But that team was so good, but we will never, ever put them in the class because Duke beat them on that night in Indianapolis. And all of the numbers that they had, all of the records, how many times did they score over 100? How many times did they run people out of the gym? But here's another aspect of this that is also needs to kind of be brought up. That 90 team, and even the 91 team, but the 90 team that won the championship, they were unfairly labeled that season as thugs. They were unfairly labeled,
you know,
because
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that's the only thing I remember.
Yeah,
really, of them.
It's really funny. I think HBO had a documentary on UNLV. It's either HBO or 30 for 30. But I'll never forget. There was they were talking about that team, and they said, "Look, these guys never got in trouble." Right now, Lloyd Daniels, who they brought in the late 80s, he got in trouble. Like, he was a recruit. He got caught for cocaine. He never played a second for UNLV, but he was one of Tark's recruits. He didn't have a very good education, didn't have good grades, got in trouble with drugs. Tark brought him in anyway. There was a lot of media in Las Vegas at the time. There was a lot of media scrutiny on the program. Like, who are you bringing in? Like, what kind of players are you bringing in here? Like, these kids can't even pass high school. You bring them into a college? But the kids that played on the 90 team, right? Greg Anthony, their point guard, was the president of the College Republicans, right? Larry Johnson was a fun basketball player, never got in trouble. Anderson Hunt didn't get in trouble. These guys never got arrested. They weren't a problem for the university. They had personalities. They had larger than life personalities. And in 90, if you can believe this, I swear it's true, especially you young people out there that are younger than 30. I swear it's true. The Duke Blue Devils in the 90 championship game against UNLV were the good guys. Leitner, freshman Hurley, Mike Krzyzewski, they were the good guys. They were a private school from the South, going up against the rebels of UNLV, of Las Vegas, of all places, with a team that had swagger, popularity. They were look, their name was the Rebels. They were popular with people that wanted to have a rebellious attitude. Their gear sold out all across the country. And the Duke Blue Devils, this, again, private school in the middle of North Carolina, they were the good guys. And it really is amazing how Duke was ever labeled that, but Duke was labeled that. But it was an unfair label for UNLV at the time.
It really was. Like, they were the saviors of college basketball.
Right. I mean, they
down the dark side.
Exactly. I mean, but they were really confident. I mean, that team was really confident. They knew they'd beat you. They knew they would kill you. There were articles. Like, think about using that term now. Like, you very people are very careful to call athletes thugs, right? It's there's a racial connotation to that that people just go, no, I'm not. We're kind of done using that term. It was used freely in 1990 when you discussed the UNLV basketball team. Tarkanian hated it because he loved his kids. Those guys loved him. And he would say over and over again, these are not troublemakers. These kids are going to class. They are not problems. They are not getting arrested. They are not, they are great, great kids. They are great student athletes. I mean, student athletes, maybe. I mean, some of them probably skipped a few, but who knows? But the reality was that they were not what the media wanted to label them. And they could have been the greatest basketball college basketball team ever. They could have. But Duke was so much more prepared the second time around in that game. And it was just fascinating how I, you know, just seeing how many people were remembering that from like my friends who were in Vegas media at the time, 30 years ago, covering that team and kind of reminiscing. And I just said, you know what? I do remember that team. I do remember how good that team was. But we don't ever talk about the undefeated season that wasn't because they didn't win. They didn't win. We always point out that with the Patriots, right? Undefeated season, lost to the Giants, makes it all, you know, irrelevant. It's all irrelevant. Even though there were records and all of that, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. And there are plenty of teams. We could go through a whole list of teams that fit that bill, who have had really good regular seasons, really great postseason runs, get to the World Series, Super Bowl, NBA championship. Goodbye. Finishes out. They don't close the deal. All right, again, Richard Justice is joining us in this hour. That's coming up in 15 minutes. Don't want to miss that as we get an idea of when baseball might be starting it up and what it would look like. What are some of the rumors that are out there? It's Wake Up Call. Tony D, Ron Culver.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us again. Wake Up Call. Tony D, Ron Culver here on a Friday. O'Reilly Auto Parts will help make your auto repair, maintenance, and restoration projects easier, so when your car isn't stopping like it used to, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts help you find the parts and supplies you need to do the job right the first time. Now, for a limited time, save 15% when you buy any set of Brake Best pads and two Brake Best rotors. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. You know, I was talking about UNLV's season where they were undefeated, then lost to Duke, and then didn't complete the championship. Run. That is the worst, isn't it? When you have a team that is just so good and you know all season that your team is great, really great, and then they don't win a championship. You just go back and you're like, oh, what happened?
Patriots.
Especially in a one and done tournament setting, right? It's one thing when you can sort of see it like in an NBA finals where you're like, I don't think we got this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm starting to see it erode. Like, every day is a loss, and we're analyzing that loss, and then another loss, and then you're analyzing that loss, and there's something wrong, and you can sense it, like, when you're in a seven-game series. But when you go into a one-and-done, and you've got all the confidence in the world, whether it's an NFL playoff or an NCAA tournament game, and you don't complete that deal, there's just a lingering effect. It lasts for years. It could last decades where you remember that team and go, how in the world did we not win a championship? How did we not get that done? And look, the list, there's a huge list of that. There's a 15-1 Vikings team that lost to the Atlanta Falcons in the 90s, right? I mean, there's a whole bunch of examples. Panthers lost the Super Bowl to the Broncos.
But they had already lost the game, right?
Yeah, they were 15-1.
They were 15-1, but still, yeah, I mean, 15-1.
Yeah.
That's but even to if you, sneeze at.
Exactly. I mean, you don't even have to be undefeated. You're
just a dominant team.
Head and shoulders above everybody else. And you know
go as far as back as last year. We thought the Ravens were just going to march right into this.
Absolutely.
Like, why even bother having a tournament? Just put them in there now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then they just don't capitalize on it. And you're like, God, what if? And listen, I'm not saying we need to change the way we view teams. I think the championship has to be on the Sunday, the top of the Sunday of your season. If you don't have that, I honestly couldn't care less about the records you set or how good you were during the regular season. I'm in that camp. But it is amazing how quickly we don't even think. Like we totally forget. If you don't win a championship, what you've done like during that season. Like I say it all the time, I don't think people remember the specifics of the 91 UNLV team, how good they were, because why bother? They didn't win the championship. They didn't even make the championship game. Right? So why bother? It's irrelevant. And it's the same thing. Like, you could talk about Randy Moss and Tom Brady, and you could say the 2007 season and how great it was and the records. Nobody cares. They lost to the Giants.
Again.
They lost to the Giants. I mean, it makes everything that they did forgettable to a lot of people. Not maybe to the fans, because I think the fans know. Look, I can tell you right now, I got friends that grew up in Vegas, were big UNLV fans. I bet they could tell me all of the 91 season. I bet they could tell me who was the leading scorer and how they rolled over this team and how they rolled over that team. And I'm sure they can. But to them, it's part of the pain. It's not part of it. Their memory banks have it because they were fans, they were invested, and the investment didn't pay off. I'm talking about us as a general sports society. We don't remember teams that were really, really good that don't win the championship. And if we do, we only remember they were good because they didn't win the championship. We don't necessarily remember super specifics. Look, the Patriots... The Patriots of the undefeated season, and there were two games I remember. Michael probably remembers a few more. There were two games I remember where I felt like the perfect season was in real jeopardy. There was a game against the Eagles that I felt like the Eagles were playing with them. But then there was a game against the Ravens. And this game against the Ravens, there was a fourth down that the Ravens stopped against the Patriots. The defense stopped, thought they were getting the ball back, which they would have just probably ran out the clock. But the Ravens had called timeout just before the snap. And the Ravens defense was furious because it gave the Patriots another chance to convert the first down. And they did. I mean, I remember Ed Reed looking at the sideline, like, who told you guys you could play with men? Like, who told you could hang out with men? You child. Who called timeout? Like, I mean, just remember that they were furious about that. And it's, you know, but again, those things are small memories, but would have been bigger had they won the Super Bowl. Michael's got a perfect example. The 2001 Seattle Mariners, they won 116 games that year in 2001 and lost in the playoffs, didn't make it to the World Series. Again, I have no idea what the statistics were for that team. I have no idea what Ken Griffey hit. I have no idea what A-Rod hit. I have no idea whoever was on that team. No idea. Gone. Just gone. To history. And sometimes you just have to bring them up. And, you know, they make probably cool documentaries, you know, about the season that was or the season that could have been and all of that. But it's amazing how we do that in sports. We just simply don't see... Until you have to come home with that title, and when you come home with that title, then we put everything in perspective and say, this is one of the best teams of all time. I mean, listen, there's no doubt in my book. That year, they played, Duke played Kansas for the national championship and won. There's no doubt UNLV would have won the championship had they gotten by Duke. I think Duke would have been, if they had squeaked by, if Greg Anthony does not get called for the charge, and that ball goes in, and they win, and they squeak that game out, I think Tark had enough film to show his team, you guys were very close to blowing this. Let's not blow this Monday night. Let's get this championship. And you guys were close to being upset. You guys pulled it off, but let's finish the deal. And then they would have gone down as one of the greatest college basketball teams ever.
Yeah, I just like the fact that you bring up that tournament in particular, and you can reference Duke being the good guys.
Yeah, that's right.
From then on out, I don't know, maybe it was probably just the following year that they were labeled the bad guys. From
sure.
Eternity.
I think once Duke captured the championship, I think once they got the title, because Duke had been a bridesmaid, never a bride, right? They were there in 86. Yep. They were in the Final Four in 86 with Mark Allery. They were there in 88. They were there in 89. They were lost in 90. No, I'm sorry, not 88. Apologize. Not 88. 89, 90, 91, and 92. So they lost in 89 in Seattle. They lost in 90 in the championship game by 30. But I think once they crossed the goal line and won the championship, I think they started to become villains. And everyone started going, okay, fine. Krzyzewski, you got your championship. Now we hate your team. Now we hate you guys. Because Duke was always a team that would get there and just they couldn't close it out. Then when they did close it out, that's when all the hatred poured all over them. All right, Richard Justice coming up next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us here on Wake Up Call here on a Friday. Like a lot of you, we're wondering when sports will come back to us, and then when they do, what capacity, and what would it look like? Well, there's a lot of speculation out there. We'll go to our Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today, MLB.com's Richard Justice joining us here on Wake Up Call. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Tony. How are you doing this morning?
Good. I'm doing good. Richard, I know this with a lot of speculation, and there's a lot of ideas of what baseball would look like if it were to come back. If it would, what's kind of the leader in the clubhouse in terms of ideas of what a season could look like?
To play as many games as possible. You know, we at this point are at the mercy of a public health crisis, the likes of which we have never seen in at least 100 years on this planet. That comes first. And so when is it safe to go back to the ballpark? When is it safe to get the players back together again? Those are questions we can't answer. What we do know is this. There's a commitment from both sides, the players and owners, to play the season and to play as many games as possible.
I sense that, and I've been saying this a while, like, and I think a lot of people have too. Look, all the rules are thrown out the window. If you want to salvage the season, everything is on the table. I don't care what it is. We don't need to have an all-star game. We don't need to have a postseason that looks exactly like the other postseasons. The idea of a neutral site World Series seems to be generating some buzz. Does that look like that will actually happen? Because if you want as many games as possible, then put the World Series in a warm weather climate. Eliminate the cold weather stadiums.
Yeah, that is the worst case scenario, because you wouldn't like the atmospherics in the ballpark. On the other hand, we don't know when the sport comes back if there will even be fans in the stands. We don't know if, for instance, the Yankees will be playing their home games in Tampa, which would make sense if you're not going to have fans in the stands. You know, what I get as a sports fan, and I'm sure you feel the same way too, like, there is going to be such a hunger to watch games. And if that means watching them on TV, we're going to watch them on TV. I think they just want, you know, again, though, this is about the pandemic and how we feel, when do we, at the point we feel safe again. And we're not close to being there yet. And there will be a point, though, where it's time to get back to normal things, and people are going to crave normal things more than ever, and nothing's more normal than watching a baseball game. So, and that's what I get, is that if it means playing doubleheaders, if it means altering the way the schedule has played out in the past, I think both the players and owners badly, badly want to do it.
Yeah, that's a great point. In terms of the players and the owners, you look, we're all in this together and we all kind of want the same things. But if I'm in the players union, or is there some things I got to go, look, I don't want the owners to take full advantage of this situation. I may not want to play 100 games in 105 days.
Well, I don't know. It seems to me the players are willing to do that.
Yeah.
That they want to go play. And what we've had now, we have an agreement. And the agreement is the players are going to get paid for the games that they play. In exchange for that, they're going to get their service time. In other words, Mookie Betts is going to be a free agent after the season, whether the season is 100 games or 50 games or whatever. And so this ability to work together in this crisis, both probably, I hope, maybe I'm wishful thinking, bodes well for a labor agreement 18 months from now.
Has there been any discussion of saying, okay, look, we don't know when we're going to start baseball. We don't even know what the season would look like if we did. But if we do have a start date, if something happens that we know it's going to be July 1st or July 15th, we need X amount of time in a rejuvenated spring training. Has that at least been sort of concrete?
I think the minimum you're going to need is probably a month. I've heard Blue Jays president Mark Shapiro say that. But again, that's going to come back to what are the size of the rosters, what are the schedules going to look like. You can vary things. You know, Justin Verlander will be ready to go three or four innings if he's healthy. That's a bad example. Gerrit Cole will be ready to go three or four innings at the beginning. And if you have, say, a 30-man roster, you can do that at the beginning. And the one thing that is obvious is that everything's on the table. We're going to consider things we've never considered before. For instance, you probably heard Mark Cuban say, I always thought the NBA season should end in August. It should always be shifted back. And that's one of the things that will be discussed,
yeah.
But when it's safe to come back.
From a standpoint of the economics here, I mean, look, we can talk about Major League Baseball and it comes back and whatnot. How are the minor leagues taking this? Is there some teams that are really may not come back because of this, or is everybody kind of protected?
You've got restaurants in your neighborhood. Are they going to come back? I mean, True. These are all smaller businesses that don't have a huge profit margin, and it remains to be seen on all of those things. I mean, the phrase, the economic impact, the bottom line is it's devastating. The game makes revenue. Revenue is generated by games being played. And when they're not games being played, it is devastating for every team, for every owner, and for Major League Baseball and all the minor leagues, all the independent leagues, for ESPN, for MLB Network, for everyone.
Richard Justice joining us, MLB.com. There was a story yesterday about the kind of a reminder of where the Astros were with Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch, and that the end of the 2020 year, whatever it looks like, their suspensions will be done. Doesn't matter how many games are played. It's not tied to any specific game. It kind of drew some controversy. Some people didn't think that was right. Some people said, well, it's part of the suspension. How do you feel about that in terms of what Major League Baseball is trying to say back when it was business as usual to where we are today?
Yeah, it's the same as the players. Your service time is your service time. And the suspension was for the 2020 season. And when the 2020 season is over, whatever there is of a 2020 season, they're free to go. I think it's important, though, not to lose sight of the fact that forget the suspension. What they've lost in terms of their good names and their reputation is far greater than the suspensions. I think A.J. Hinch is going to be a hot commodity for managerial openings next year. I don't know what Jeff Luhnow's future. I don't know that he still wants to be in baseball. But again, they both have a long way to go to get their good names back. And I think, at least in A.J., who I've talked to, I mean, he understands that.
Do you think this, because, I mean, I was blown away by this, Richard, because I was saying, boy, at the beginning of the month, this is all we were talking about when it came to baseball. How is baseball going to handle this? How are the players going to treat the Astros? How was the Astros' reputation? Now we're at a point where we're just begging for the Astros to play baseball again, and who cares? Does this care? When we're back, does this still matter? Is this still an important baseball story when the pandemic is gone and we're back to playing full stadiums again?
Yeah, I mean, there's the unintended consequences.
Right.
The Nationals are not going to are waiting for their appropriate victory lap in the same way, their ring ceremony, all of that. We're just in a world we've never been in before. And so will the hatred for the Astros still exist when they come back? I think people are going to be so hungry, and I think the Astros are going to be so hungry to play on again. I think Alex Bregman would welcome boos right now,
sure.
Just to be back
point.
On the field and play. Yeah, I think there's still going to be, when we get back to normalcy, it's, oh, yeah, we don't like you guys. And so I do think that'll come back. But right now, everybody would welcome the chance to boo Carlos Correa or whoever. I mean, it's just one of the things that has spun away from us. Does it ease their... what was going to be the most interesting year you can imagine. When has a team ever played that everyone wants it to fail? That hasn't happened before. And I know those guys. And I could, in just the little time I spent with them in spring training, it was past the anger, past the news conferences. And you could tell there was a sadness. It has worn on them because, they were the team everybody enjoyed watching play.
Right.
And now it's tarnished.
You've been around sports a long time, and you've seen the good of what it can bring. You've seen the bad of what it can bring. You've seen how unifying it can be. You've seen how divisive it can be. Just from your experience, and we put the seriousness of this pandemic, and we know we've got it all in perspective. We know who the real heroes are that are on the front line of this. But in your experience with sports, how important is it to get back, not just from a normalcy standpoint, but to get back to stadiums and the entertainment that this does provide to people in our country?
Hugely important, because this is part of the fabric of the society, and it's gone now. I said to somebody the other day, how great would it be? How much would you like to see a Clippers-Lakers playoff game right now?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Right. And so that's part of it. And I think back to what did the Yankees mean to New York City in the healing after 9/11? I was at Shea Stadium for the first game in New York after 9/11, and it was inspiring. I was in San Francisco for the first game after the earthquake, and it was, there was a feeling, a bond, a feeling of community, like, okay, we can, it's okay to laugh again and clap and have fun and boo. And we're craving those things right now.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. It we're not going to be really truly back until we really start disliking our rivals again, and you know, and making right. mountains out of molehills, and the kind of the things
right.
that we do, where there is a sense of this might not be important to somebody on the outside of our sports world, but the inside of our sports world, these things are really big deals. Cheating and sign stealings are big deals. You know, that kind of feeling again. Richard, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Johnny.
Absolutely. Richard Justice, MLB.com. Really good stuff. And I think he's important. I think he's right. He's been around sports for a long time, and he knows how important this is. I know to the outside it seems frivolous. I get it. But I do think many of you out there, and I say this a lot, I give you guys a lot more credit than people do. People think that those of us who are sports nuts and we're sports crazy, we don't have our lives in perspective. We, you know, that the games are more important than family, and games are more important than our kids or whatever. It's not. We know that this what it is. We know it's important to us, but we also know that the doctors and the nurses and the scientists are on the front line of this and get our full respect.
Yeah, and I hope that once sports does happen, there's an endless parade of
right.
these individuals
Absolutely.
At every stadium and arena across America.
Look, don't ever forget after 9/11, how many times in New York were the first responders that went into those buildings were honored? Constantly, the Mets and Yankees wearing the caps of the NYPD, the fire department, FDNY, all of those honors that they gave, they knew. They weren't doing that for publicity. They didn't feel that they were more important than those people. And I think you're going to see that with sports. I think you're going to see every local team going to their hospitals and saying, we want you to throw out the first pitch. We want to give you guys tickets and suites. We want to remind everybody what you did through all this, how much you worked for this. And I do not think at all that many of you have sports in some sort of wacky perspective. But it like he said, it's part of the fabric of what we are. And it's part of the fabric of who we are. Look, go through the history of mankind. We've always enjoyed competition. In whatever capacity competition is, we've always enjoyed it. We've always watched it. As soon as we could walk, we were wondering as a species
who's
the
fastest.
Always. We've always done that, right? It's part of who we are. And I think I don't want to live in a world that doesn't have sports. I don't want to live in a world that doesn't have fun. This kind of entertainment. I think it's the best unscripted entertainment that's out there. I really do. And I think it's important to get it back. But I also know that the people who are doing the hard work today are not going to be lost when we are back to normal. I don't think that. I think we are going to remember everybody that worked 20-hour shifts taking care of us and spending hours and hours in labs trying to find a vaccine or something, whatever it is, right? The people that will run into the building when it's on fire. Those kind of people. I think we will be always thinking about them, always honoring them. Yes, we will be arguing silly sports stuff. It's what we do because the stuff in our world, that stuff is important, right? Like I was just saying, stealing signs is a big deal in our sports world, right? We don't want you to cheat.
And we want to sit there and we want to have that argument of, hey, my team's better than your team.
That's right. Is it more important than arguing about, you know, saving lives in a hospital? Of course not. But nobody ever said it was. Nobody ever said it was.
And we're not going to pretend that it is.
Right. Exactly. And like I was saying, we'll truly be back when the Yankees and Red Sox hate each other again. Right.
Yep.
Right? There'll be some unity.
Or like what,
there'll be some kumbaya.
Like what Richard Justice just said. You know, we'll truly be back when everyone's booing Alex Bregman because, and Alex Bregman is smiling and welcoming the boo.
Exactly. Great point. All right. It's Wake Up Call. Tony D, Ron Culver here on a Friday.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Michael on Twitter, you're correct about the current status in sports. I actually had a beer with a buddy of mine at my house yesterday. Even though he's a Yankee fan, I refrained from punching him in the face. That's the kind of restraint that this coronavirus outbreak is giving all of us, Michael.
It's bringing people closer together.
Bringing people closer together.
As long as they're 6 feet apart.
That's right. That's right. By the way, I didn't know this. This is something I learned because of the virus I never thought about before. So I was talking to my wife because my hair is going crazy. Like, I desperately need a haircut. And I said, I wonder if there's anybody that would they could come in a hazmat suit. I don't care. Could they come in my house and give me a haircut? And my wife said, no, they could lose their license if they do that. And I didn't know that. I did not know that.
I better stop telling the bartender to come into my house.
Is that true? Is that? She said a friend of hers was asked that on our local town Facebook page, who's a hairstylist.
I don't know.
And she said, I can't go to your house.
Okay.
I can't do it outside of the salon.
Would you tell on her?
No, I would never do that, right?
Okay, how would someone know?
That's right. That's what I told her. I said, well, I wouldn't tell on her. She goes, well, I don't know. She might not want to risk it anyway. I said,
Do you have that person in your neighborhood who's documenting everything?
Yeah, right? Who'd be like, taking pictures through the windows, going, I see somebody's cutting hair.
Yeah, well, I'll tell the person to come in dressed as a plumber.
I don't care what. They could come in an astronaut's outfit. My hair is getting out of just crazy. But then again, it's, first world problems, I guess. It is Wake Up Call. Tony D. Ron Culver.